It is just after a quarter to 10 on 9 to Noon. Back to our contributors now. If we go to Christchurch now and to Neil Jones, I mean, they're knackered, aren't they, the politicians and many of the senior public servants. I don't know many people in the country who aren't, but what they have had to deal with has just been off the scale this year. And what is it when they do get some sleep and some rest that they're going to have to start next year dealing with? Neil?
I think there's a few major ones. So obviously the vaccine rollout at the opening of borders is going to be a huge issue next year. There's going to be big questions about when it's safe to start opening those borders as we start to get the vaccine out, and also the efficacy of the vaccine. So that's going to be a big issue. I think housing really is becoming an increasingly pressing social crisis. I mean, we would have given our right arms to have been in the position we are now compared to the start of lockdown. The Reserve Bank pumping all that money into the economy and the government's fiscal stimulus, it has warded off what was looking like a depression. But the flip side of that is all that cheap money flowing into the economy has driven up house prices. So there's going to be a lot of people this Christmas. In fact, there'll be two classes of Christmas this year. One of them will be people talking about how well their property portfolio is going. And one of them will be people saying, how can I pay the rent and how can I ever get into a house? So the government has to act on that. Climate change, it's going to be a big year for that. The last term really set up the framework around the Zero Carbon Act, around the ETS reforms, about what our climate change response looks like. This year we've got the Climate Commission in February providing its first advice, and the government's going to have to make some tough decisions. And I think a couple other things just to touch on, with the incoming Biden administration, how the government manages our relationship with the US, particularly with an increasingly assertive China. Which is, basically in a trade war with Australia at the moment. And the other thing I think will be of interest will be workplace relations. So fair pay agreements are high on the agenda, and the government is pretty certain they're pushing those through. So it'll be interesting to see whether that kicks up a response from business or not.
Rod, let's pick up on business. You wanted to highlight also today the business survivors and some of the thrivers, actually. And we were talking about how it's been all hands to the pump. Some of those very smallest businesses, and these are the ones you see when you've been out walking during lockdown, right? And people in your street, literally, or people in your neighbourhood who you know, are making decisions about how long they can keep staff on and whether they should take out more of a loan or they have just worked their guts off. And many couldn't do it, and many are dealing with the stresses still. Others have come out of it and have thrived, Rod. Can you hear me, Rod? We got the mic on? You're away now.
Absolutely. And, of course, my sympathies go out very strongly to those people who have struggled and haven't managed to get through this. And we're not out of the woods yet. So there's all sorts of deeply hidden stresses, strains and the rest that even if the economy is continuing to do well into next year, those could still surface.
And Rod, we should just say, some of those people who made the decisions made the best decision going for themselves and for their businesses and for their staff, which is to say, look, this doesn't add up. We've got to get real about where we're at. And I know some exited very early, and it was absolutely the right thing to do for everybody. There have been tough calls no matter how you've looked at it.
Yes. And one thing that on one hand has helped has been wage subsidies. But on the other hand, that might have given some companies a false sense of hope that they could get through it. So there's a bit of a two-way thing going on there. And of course, we've had companies that have done very well pay back wage subsidies. The warehouse is the latest to do that. But just to call out a couple who still haven't, Fulton Hogan and Hallenstein Glassons are two, plus companies like Coca-Cola Amatil New Zealand, and they really should be paying back those subsidies. But on the other hand, there are companies like Ian Taylor down in Dunedin, his animation research company, which is well known for its 3D graphics and interactive programs, that work stopped instantly. Ian's decision was in essence to take last year's profit and apply it to staff to keep them on full income, and not knowing where the work was coming from, but then it did come through. So there's lots and lots of stories like that, and I think that's been one of the most impressive things about the year.
Carry on, Rod.
Well, I just wanted to touch very briefly on markets, because the best performing thing you could have been in markets, although it's pretty quirky, was Bitcoin up 220%. The worst thing is crude oil down 23% on the year. And for me, the most important from an historic point of view is ExxonMobil was kicked out of the Dow Jones Industrial Average in August this year because it was no longer relevant to the index. Other companies were bigger. It had been a founding member of the Dow Jones Industrial Average in 1896, and it was replaced by Salesforce, a US cloud-based customer management system. And this was just the surest sign that investors really are turning against oil companies and wanting to see oil companies try to move away from their conventional businesses. And in contrast to ExxonMobil, which has not got that message strategically, BP has. And so there's quite a lot of investor support around BP's decision to put a lot less money into exploring for more oil and gas and a lot more money into offshore wind farms, for example. And then briefly, New Zealand, the biggest performing stock, outperforming Tesla, Zoom and all the rest, is another Dunedin company, Pacific Edge. It started the year at a magnificent 12 cents and ended at $1.23, a 900% increase. This was a company floated in 2003 to develop a bladder cancer test, and it's just put in the hard yards since its listing in 2003. But because of lockdown in the States, doctors turned in a big way to its very simple cancer screening kit in lieu of a point that people can do in their home, in lieu of going into a doctor's office. And so its business took off like a rocket.
Susie Wiles, thank you, Rod. Susie Wiles, what have we learned, the good, the bad and the ugly, about the intersection of science, leadership by governments, freedom of speech and all these things? It's been a game of two halves. We went down the conspiracy theory rabbit holes, but equally we've had the leaders like Anthony Fauci and many communicators like yourself here in New Zealand, where people really have listened and responded and worked as one.
I think the astonishing thing about this year has been people have seen how science works in, I mean, it's been speeded up, but it's been in the open, right? And so there's, you know, there's been experts arguing with each other. A friend of mine in at Harvard University put it as we're flying the plane while building it, right? You know, that we've been having to make decisions based on small amounts of evidence. And then people are seeing us change our minds, often within a matter of days, you know, as new evidence comes in. And I'm constantly being harassed about things that I said back in January, which is just, you know, my job is to look at things as they change and then to say, this is what I think now, right? And so I think that's been hard for people. But it's also what we've shown is that, you know, governments can take the same evidence and make really, really different decisions. And that's based a lot on values. And so that's been I was asked again in the early days, what did New Zealand know? What did we know that was different from the UK? And it's like, well, we all saw the same things, but different governments made different decisions based on their values, you know, based on do we just let this virus run through and then, you know, hopefully our economy will be back up and running. And, you know, that's proven to be the worst possible option. And I think the other thing that's really come through this is you never know what expertise you're going to need, right? You know, our government was able to pull on a huge amount of experts, you know, in their academic sector. But that's a sector that's massively cutting jobs, you know, and we're doing all this incredible genome sequencing. And the reason we're doing that is because we have an amazing Dr. Gemma Geegan, who's in New Zealand, whose expertise is genomic sequencing of viruses. And she pushed from the very, you know, beginning, we should be sequencing all these strains and then we'll be able to look at transmission and how the virus is changing, right? And so she just happens to be here. She has this position and we could, you know, count on that. So we just need to be really careful about what this pandemic is going to mean for the future of science as well.
Talking to Dr. Fauci, sorry to keep name dropping, but I'm going to. I'm
jealous.
Okay. Look, the communication, I want to talk to Andrew about communication because his communication skills, even in the course of that interview, wasn't an interview. It was just you talk, Tony. I'll put some questions to you. But it was just the clear, concise communication. But his point again, good investment in fundamental basic biomedical science and research, because this is one, but it won't be the last. And we have such short memories, and that funding system works on such a ridiculous kind of system, really,
doesn't
it?
Not only that, but it's absolutely broken. And it's kind of capitalism in action, right? The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. So, you know, if you have a good track record of things, then, you know, the funding mechanism basically means that money tends to go to esteemed professors who, you know, are good at getting money, while everyone else just sort of languishes. And that's really, really tough for kind of, you know, young and middle researchers, which are the future, right? And they end up kind of having to leave. So, and our funding rates are abysmal. Like less than 1 in 10 of the funding applications will get funded. It's absolutely appalling.
Just a quick thought from you, Andrew, on the communication side of things from the media's point of view. I mean, there was a slight takeover in some ways with the daily 1 p.m. briefings. There was a limit to questions you could ask. There was a limit to follow-ups. And there was a limit to, while there was a daily appearance, it was a stage-managed appearance. And there is a tolerance of that if it's done appropriately in a crisis situation. But looking into 2021, when a whole new range of tests come, how well geared is the media to do its job? Because it was allied with some of those scientists at the start, Professor Skegg on this program, right at the start saying we're 8 days behind where the UK is at the modelling I'm looking at. How well posited is the media for what comes next?
I think they're very well in a very good position, and it's similar to what Susie's saying about how science works. The 1 o'clock press has shown how journalism works, how the sausage is made, the shouting over the top of each other, the repeating of the questions, which a lot of members of the public were surprised by and horrified by. But that's where, you know, it's that confrontation of information and ideas that teases it out. Again, I'm going to base my overall comment on Susie too. It comes back to your values, and communication is all about if you've got a clear set of values and it's very clear to the community why you're doing something and therefore what follows from it, it's so much easier to communicate. I mean, we're seeing in Britain at the moment confusion over what are lockdowns, what are the rules. We're even seeing it in Sydney at the moment in the northern beaches, which bit of the bubble can have Christmas with which bit of the bubble. It's a mess. And the beauty here in New Zealand is that we've had a very clear set from the start. The journalists have been able to interrogate that, expose some flaws in it, but fundamentally the community understood what we were trying to achieve.
And that tone, to come back to politics, Trish, that tone, again, for the journalists as well as everything, it's why people got a bit upset at those media conferences. We've all sat through them. We know why why you need to push and you need to get the answer and not the spin. But for the most part, the tone of the media has been appropriate when it's come to the inquisitorial side of things, which we saw was vital also to the politics.
Oh, absolutely critical. And I actually think this year was an example of just how healthy New Zealand's democracy is all the way around. And you look on the media side, they were dealing with something that they had never dealt with before. And on the political side, you can argue, you know, sometimes people got the tone wrong. But ultimately, I think everybody, to Andrew's point, had their values in the right place. And that's why New Zealand really stood out. But I think 2021, looking ahead, it's the year of a decision about where to spend your political capital. I think that's going to be the big issue for the government next year, because there will be some very tricky decisions to make. As Rod's pointed out, we are in a unknown experiment around things like monetary policy, and nobody knows where exactly that's going to end up. And on to the big issues like climate change, the challenge there is going to be about actually breaking it down for Kiwis from a sort of a big nebulous term into stuff they can get their heads around. And if you're looking at something really transformational, you know, there has been a political global movement started this year, which I think is fantastically important, and New Zealand could follow it. And that comes out of Colombia with the total ban on shark fishing. Now, sharks are a keystone species in our oceans. New Zealand needs to start treating them in the 2020s like we did whales and dolphins back in the 70s and 80s. And that is one small step that we could really, the government could rally New Zealanders around and really make quite a big move forward. So that's my little
passion project.
That is my absolute passion for 2021.
Right. A passion for the ocean and all things in it is fine by me. And I hope some of us who are lucky enough get to enjoy plenty of ocean time these next few days and weeks. Susie Wiles, Andrew Holden, Rod Oram, Trish Shuse and Neil Jones, you worked so hard for us for so little thanks and even less other stuff. Thank you for coming in on Christmas Eve of all days. Have a wonderful family time and Christmas, and catch you back in 2021. You're listening to 9 to Noon.
Thanks. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.